halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve is our Facebook page. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Gus Katsaros. Gus's work is available at McKean's Hockey, also available on Roto-World. We start our fantasy hockey preview of the upcoming 2016-17 NHL season with Gus. Gus, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for the invitation, guys, and for the kickoff.
Always happy to have you on the program, Gus. You're our go-to guy when it comes to fantasy hockey, of course. And, you know, we're going to stick with the forwards that are available, you know, in your upcoming NHL draft. And, you know, all the fantasy hockey drafts I'm in are generally more of the pool style as opposed to head-to-head. One point for a goal, 1 point for an assist. So that's sort of in the back of my head and should be in the back of our audience's head for a lot of this conversation. Gus, you have the first overall pick in your fantasy hockey pool. You know, ours is next Monday. Goals and assists are worth the same amount. Are you taking Patrick Kane or are you taking someone else, maybe a Connor McDavid?
Well, I think that with Patrick Kane, there was some very special circumstances that led to a 100-plus point season last season, primarily a 26-game point streak that just blew up his point level. So I don't think that we're going to see anybody over 100 points. Having said that, I don't think that Patrick Kane may win the Art Ross again this year. I think that he'll drop a little bit just because of Chicago's circumstances. And I think that Connor McDavid should be the number one pick. I think that he'll probably end up winning the Art Ross if you don't feel comfortable picking a second-year player that, you know, could arguably be in one of the best in the world. Then you can always fall back on a Sidney Crosby and you know, I would have mentioned Tyler Seguin in that same conversation, but, you know, the injury woes, and not just to him, but that Dallas front core is just being devastated. So it's tough to add him into that conversation at this point. Connor McDavid's the guy.
Cus, you mentioned Sidney Crosby. He's coming off of winning the World Cup of Hockey MVP, winning the Stanley Cup. He had 85 points last season in 80 games, but he had that terrible start to the season. How many points do you think Crosby gets this year, and is it possible that he finishes second to Connor McDavid in overall scoring?
You know, there's still the possibility that if he comes out as his second half self, he could easily run away with the Art Ross and challenge for that 100-point level too. Again, you need special circumstances in today's NHL to really get to that 100-point level. If Crosby comes out and just continues the way that he's been playing over the last, you know, calendar year, he could challenge that point. So I don't think that Crosby winning the Art Ross is out of the question. We feel that he's probably going to be in the mix regardless. So, you know, you can't make a bad choice in picking Crosby, even if you do end up picking him over Connor McDavid. I don't think that the point difference, especially using the ranking system that you're describing, will make that much of a difference between those two players.
Gus Katsaros is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing fantasy hockey forwards. Gus's work is available in McKean's Hockey and Roto World. Gus, Jamie Benn, you mentioned Tyler Seguin in a previous answer, and of course, Jamie Benn also with the Dallas Stars. He's averaged 88 points the last 2 years. He had that off-season surgery. Any concerns about drafting Jamie Benn this year, and is he a clear top five pick in your upcoming office pool?
Yeah, I think that he would probably be one in the top five. The injury concerns are they're not as prevalent, I think, for Ben as it probably is for Tyler Seguin. He's missed more extensive time. At the same time, what happens is, I think in Sagan's absence, Ben has just, you know, picked up his own slack and made up for the missing Seguin as well. So I really don't think that there's an issue on whether or not he misses time with Seguin, but you can't go wrong picking Ben in a top five situation. He's a guy that not only just challenged for won the Art Ross, he can definitely challenge for that again. So it's not something that's out of the question. I'd be a little weary about the injury, but he seems to be doing okay in training camp. He seems to be on track for the regular season, so I'm going to assume that he has a full regular season, drops down to somewhere in the second tier, close to the Art Boss conversation.
Gus, we wanted to ask you about John Tavares. He had an excellent World Cup of Hockey, I thought. He's a guy that dropped from 86 points a couple of years ago to 70 points last season, and he's going to have some new line mates this year. Andrew Ladd is probably going to be the biggest benefactor of playing alongside John Tavares if he stays there. Do you expect Tavares to get back to 80 to 85 points this year?
Oh, yeah. I expect Tavares to be in that upper echelon as well. He could, again, giving some very special circumstances on his end, but he may not necessarily be in the Art Ross conversation, but he'll be in the top 10 scoring. And you know, that World Cup hockey debut, like his performance in that, you know, being a best-on-best tournament and being one of the more visible and more creative players for Team Canada, you know, I thought that showed just what you're going to get out of a John Tavares, regardless of all the changes that the Islanders did in the offseason.
Gus Katsaros is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing fantasy forwards as part of your fantasy hockey preview. Gus, Steven Stamkos is a guy that, you know, obviously he had a lot of the spotlight on him last season. He ends up re-signing with the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, people think of Stamkos and they think of the guy who got 60 goals a number of years ago. They think of a preeminent offensive player. It's now been two straight sort of, you know, down years relative for Steven Stamkos in where he's been under a point per game. Last year, 64 points in 77 games. 2 years ago, 72 points in 82 games. Is it time to maybe recalibrate our expectations for Steven Stamkos? Or do you think that he still can get back to another level where he was a consistent point per game player in the NHL?
Well, I think you even kind of see something in terms of the model to expect from Stamkos in Alex Ovechkin. You still have a premier goal scorer, and goals are what win you games. So Stamkos and Ovechkin both provide, you know, the prime piece of data that's required in order to prolong winning. And what I happen to think is that the surrounding cast in Tampa Bay does a decent enough job to prop up his assist levels, but he'll always be a primary goal scorer. So his overall point totals might be affected simply because of the fact that he doesn't, or it's not that he doesn't, he's just not involved in the goal scoring around rather than, you know, doing the things himself. So I think what you'll see with Stamkos is under a point per game, just like you said, which again is going to be balanced by a very high number of goals, less number of assists, and something where if you really are more dependent on goals, perhaps you're in a league where, you know, goals are either weighted more, or you're in a rotisserie league and you really do need, you know, more goals to weigh up that category. That's where you would use Stamkos first. From a points-only perspective, you know, he can kind of creep into the top 10, but he could even be into that top 15, maybe even top 20, depending on, you know, if he's able to score enough according to what he's been doing in the past. And even his scoring rates are starting to dip as well, too. So getting over a point a game, I think, might be a ceiling as opposed to a plateau now for Steven Stamkos.
Gus, we have a few players that we want to ask you about, and then we're going to ask you for some sleeper picks here. And, you know, this is awesome. It's getting me pumped up for my hockey pool coming up in about a week. Taylor Hall is a guy that Drew and I were talking about last segment when it relates to Jacob Trouba and, you know, talking about why the Jets maybe didn't go after Taylor Hall in a possible trade. He's on New Jersey, of course, this year. He had 65 points in 82 games for the Edmonton Oilers last year. He's a guy that's put up 80 points before in his career. That was 3 years ago. If you're in a hockey pool, a straight-up points pool, where are you taking Taylor Hall? How many points do you think he's going to get for New Jersey this year?
Well, I think what you'll see is Hall scoring at least 30 goals. I think the main trigger point, the main trigger man in New Jersey is going to end up scoring a lot. I think you'll see less goals scored from Henrique and Palmieri, and you know, if Camilleri stays healthy, perhaps he contributes a little more too. And health is actually the issue here too. Hall has some very deep histories of you know, even missing a little bit of time or great periods of time. So if all else falls into place, and we're talking about a non-injured season, full, complete schedule, I would pencil Hall to be somewhere within the 75-point range, which is just underneath a point, maybe a little bit under a point per game. When you take into consideration, he'll miss a game here and there. And I think it's more important on, it's similar to Stamkos, where he's actually contributing more goals rather than assists. If that supporting cast in New Jersey, and that supporting cast is not very, I'll use the word good, you just won't get the type of production to push you over 80 points or a point per game. Your expectations, I think, for a Taylor Hall is score 30 goals and hope that he can provide enough assists to actually overvalue wherever you probably get him in a draft.
Gus Katsaros is our guest on the Illegal Curve Fantasy Hockey Preview Show. We're talking about fantasy hockey forwards. You can read Gus's work at McKean's Hockey and also on Roto-World. Gus, Austin Matthews or Patrick Laine was always the big question right before the NHL draft. If you had to draft one in a hockey pool, maybe you're in a pool that demands you draft a rookie, which one are you taking, Matthews or Laine?
I guess your Winnipeg listeners will be very happy to hear that, it would be Laine. And again, if we're talking about a 1 year, this is the one decision, I think that would be the runaway choice. Personally, I just feel that he'll probably be more productive offensively than Matthews will. Although, recently, especially with some of the performances through the World Cup of Hockey, Matthews going from a 13th forward and skating next to McDavid and not just not looking out of place, but actually driving and being one of the driving elements among group of seasoned pros, that bodes well for someone that's going to be in the spotlight, and especially in consideration that he's going to be compared to Laine all season long. But there's something about Laine that you could look at him and see, man, there's that potential of 50 goals, and if things really go well, it could come really, really quick. This rookie season is likely out of the question, but it's nice to see that there's this potential that he can actually reach really good offensive production in a very short period of time. I think Matthews will kind of gradually grow into that role.
Okay, Gus, this is the favorite time of the interview here. You got to give us some sleeper picks for forwards for the later rounds of hockey pools.
All right, so I'll give you my disclaimer first. There's no such thing as sleeper picks anymore, simply because of the fact there's just way too much information out there for everybody to consume. So instead of a sleeper, what you're doing is looking at value. And I feel, overall, if you approach a draft in terms of disregarding sleepers entirely and look at the value of where you can get a certain player in a certain slot, I think in the end you'll actually be more competitive and perhaps even challenge for a championship. Now, having said that, there are some players that are following, flow under the radar simply because of the fact that they're either less known or whatever the case is. So we all know what Robbie Fabry did in the playoffs, and personally I think that that's just going to spill over into the regular season. He may not be considered a sleeper, but somebody that you might want to rank up a little higher in your draft. We saw the same kind of situation with Jonathan Drouin. A guy that might actually does have that breakout capability right now is Andrei Burakovsky in Washington. He's going to step into a fantastic situation that is likely to succeed in the short term. You have two homegrowns right there in Nick Ehlers and Patrick Laine that can, those aren't necessarily sleepers, but Ehlers, I think, will go a little bit further than people rate him. I think he can perform to the 50-point level at some point this year, so that's a pretty good value for wherever you're going to get him. And then you have other guys like Oliver Bjorkstrand from Columbus, who had a fantastic Calder Cup run, and he wasn't just a passenger. He was one of the driving forces in winning that trophy, which is just as difficult as the Stanley Cup if you consider the amount of work that's involved. So he could be one of those guys that can step into Columbus and really contribute automatically out of the gate. Having said that, there's probably two guys that we probably don't consider big names, but a guy like Teddy Purcell, I think, is going to walk into a very good situation in L.A., and I think if he ends up playing on a top line with Jeff Carter, he's such a good distributor, and Carter's such a good finisher, that there's a nice little combination there. Purcell might not be on anybody's radar, but might end up being one of the better contributors over the course of the season. And, let's stick with one guy in Toronto. Personally, I think Nazem Kadri is going to go a little further down than where he should go. And Kadri has the ability to hit that 60 points. So, again, he's not going to be a sleeper. But when you look at value, I have a feeling that most people will get better value for a Kadri than they will for other players in that particular range.
Great insight from Gus Katsaros. If you want to read more of Gus's work, it's available on Roto World. And, of course, the McKean's Hockey Annual Magazine is available in stores and online everywhere. Gus, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for the insight and the analysis.
Pleasure is always mine, guys. Thanks very much. Have a great season.
You too, Gus. Take care. It's head to break. When we come back, Ezzy and I will bandy about the topic of fantasy forwards. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. If you took Patrick Kane in your hockey pool last year, you're probably pretty happy. Maybe you even won the pool, depending on your other picks. But, of course, he led the NHL in scoring, a runaway winner of the Art Ross Trophy, 106 points, 17 more than second place last season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our fantasy hockey preview show. Continuing our discussion on forwards, should mention that this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
You know, Drew, big shout out to Gus for coming on. We've had him on now, I think, for 5 years.
Something like that.
And he knows his stuff, and he's always nice enough to come on, and that was great. That just is not only getting me psyched up for my hockey pool.
You're just so psyched up today.
I'm just psyched up for hockey in general.
You're just psyched up.
You know, you can only do so much golfing and fishing in the summer, right?
Yeah, I could do more.
And by the way, do your golfing at Bell Acres or Clear Lake.
Sure. I don't really care where you do your fishing.
Yeah, there's many good places. Uh-huh. You know, I was talking to Paul Edmonds, actually, just as an aside.
Oh, boy.
You know, we started talking about fishing.
Yeah, this isn't going to be about Patrick Kane or fantasy forwards, is it?
Well, we'll get into that in a second, but, you know, you forget that as you know, I got the fishing bug this past summer.
Yes, yes.
We're probably in the best place in the world for fishing.
That's true.
And it's sometimes you forget about fishing. That. Yeah, it's incredible. But let's get into the fantasy forwards, Drew, because I know you want to ask me, am I taking Connor McDavid first overall in my hockey pool?
Well, I was going to ask you, are you listening to Gus and saying Connor McDavid's your man, or are you looking at Patrick Kane's performance from last year, factoring in even some regression,
yeah,
and saying, well, you know, it's hard to argue with what Patrick Kane did last season?
No, you know what? I'm going to agree with Gus, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
I think Connor McDavid is going to win the scoring title. I think it's going to be between Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby, and I think Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin are going to be up there again.
So you're dropping Patrick Kane. You don't think he's in the running? You don't think he's going to be at the top of the list in scoring this coming season?
I wouldn't be surprised, Drew, if he's top five. He's certainly going to be top 10.
Yeah.
But, no, I do think he will regress, and I think he'll probably still be around 80 points, 85 points, but I don't think he's going to crack the 100-point mark again this year. I think Connor McDavid's going to come close. You look at the way Connor McDavid played 14 North America at the World Cup of Hockey, and I realized that his point totals maybe weren't there. I don't even know if he ended up getting a goal or if he just had some assists. I think he might have had one goal, if that. But when you're looking at what he did as far as the speed and the type of playmaking ability he has, I think he's the best player in the world right now. And, you know, Sidney Crosby, you know, I should mention, you know, he's established himself. He's won the Stanley Cups. He's won the Olympic golds. But I'm talking about pure skill level. I think Connor McDavid can hit 100 points this year. I think it's going to go down to the wire. I think it's going to be between McDavid and Crosby and Jamie Benn for the scoring title. But if I have the first overall pick, I'm taking McDavid.
It's, you know, you make very reasonable arguments, and I can't disagree with you. I mean, I don't even know if it's a risky pick. I mean, I was going to say that there's a risk element involved there, and I guess there sort of is based on, you know, the fact he was banged up last season. But, you know, the talent you see when he's on the ice is second to none in the entire NHL. And so that, I don't think you can go wrong with Connor McDavid at that point in time. You asked Gus about Sidney Crosby, though, and he's sort of flying under the radar because of how lousy the start to his year was and how he hasn't been lighting up the score sheet in the past number of seasons, like some of the like the Patrick Kanes or like the Jamie Benns. So, you know, where do you sort of put Sidney Crosby among your first round picks? Is he going in your top three, or is he more of a top five, top six guy?
I think he's got to be either the first, second, or third guy that's taken. And, you know, Drew, if you look at his points per game in the second half of the season versus the first half of the season, it went up significantly. And, you know, he's coming off of the Stanley Cup. He's coming off of the World Cup of Hockey Championship MVP. I think you got to take him with a top two, top three pick, depending on if your pool is goals or assists. As we mentioned, if goals are worth two, then maybe you're not taking Sidney Crosby, and right. maybe you'll take Connor McDavid over Sidney Crosby because he gets more goals. But certainly Sidney Crosby, you can pencil him in most likely for 30 goals. But you're probably taking Alex Ovechkin or Steven Stamkos or maybe even a Joe Pavelski who has 40-goal potential this year, right? So if we're talking straight points, absolutely, Crosby's still a top-three pick.
So, you know, you haven't mentioned Jamie Benn, and when you look at the last...
I mentioned Jamie Benn.
I know you mentioned him, but I'm saying, you know, as being a top pick... To you, Jamie Benn is not in the conversation to be the first overall pick?
Or would no,
you be
he
okay?
is.
So you'd be okay he if is. Somebody said Jamie Benn?
I don't think that Connor McDavid is going to win the scoring race by 20, but I wouldn't be surprised if he won it by 5. And Jamie Benn has averaged 88 points the last 2 years. He has more points than anybody, Drew, so
he absolutely
has to be in the conversation. You know, he's coming off of the surgery. He's mm-hmm. ready right now for training camp. I don't know if he's been skating with the Stars, but I know that he is expected to play on opening night. So absolutely, I think Jamie Benn is one of those guys. I think you're talking about Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and probably Patrick Kane, as far as those five players are who you're picking between for the first overall pick. It's going to be exciting, Drew. We might, you know, Patrick Kane ran away with it last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to run away with it this year. I don't know. I think this might be one of the tightest races that we've seen in a long time. And if you remember when Jamie Benn won the scoring race a couple of years ago, it was very close.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. It really is. Does seem like there are no wrong answers for the sort of top five. If you're drafting anywhere in the top three to top five of your fantasy hockey pool, you're probably going to be in pretty good shape. Because if you're sitting there at fifth, and you know Crosby goes, and McDavid goes, and Kane goes, and Benn goes, well, you know, you still are going to get a very good player at that, say, number five spot without really having to think about it. And then maybe at that point in time, that's where there's a bit of a drop-off. Alex Ovechkin, if you're in a one-for-one pool, your points are worth a goal, assists are worth a goal. Alex Ovechkin, how much concern do you have about the fact he only put up 21 assists last season?
Well, it was his lowest total, I think, in his entire career. He always has more goals than assists, Drew. But mm-hmm. 21 assists was certainly lower than I would expect him to have this year. I mean, I would expect Ovechkin to be where he is every year. I don't think he's going to score 65 goals like he did, 8 or 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I would expect Alex Ovechkin to score around 50, 55 goals again this year and probably have around 30 or 35 assists. So I would expect him to probably have a slight increase in points, probably be around 80 points. But certainly if you're in a pool, and I'm in a pool every year where goals are worth two and assists are worth one,
yeah.
I think you're taking Ovechkin certainly with a top five pick.
Are you quickly, because we're right up against it, are you looking from your first round pick, are you looking for a minimum
yep.
of a point per game on average?
Yeah, your first round pick in a hockey pool, and we're in hockey pools every year,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to reach in the first round. Don't take Austin Matthews or Patrick Laine in the first round.
Or if you're against us in a pool, we do encourage you to right. do that because we're going to take all your money.
I mean, those guys aren't going to score 70, 75 points. I mean, they might. But I would expect Laine and Matthews to be more around 55, 60.
That's where the best rookies in the last you know 5 to 10 years are generally around that point total.
So depending on the format of your pool, how many teams, you're probably taking those guys in the second or third round, Drew.
Yeah.
But certainly you want to take guys that have a history, and you know you want to take those reliable players. You want to take guys that you know are guaranteed. I mean, barring an injury. You want guys in the first round, let's say if there's 10 or 12 teams in your pool, mm-hmm. you want to take guys that you know that are going to get at least 70 points, right? So you know a guy like Joe Thornton, for example, is probably good for 70 points. We talked about the top guys. Okay. A guy like Joe Pavelski.
He was good for 82 last year, point per game for Jumbo Joe
right.
last year.
Blake Wheeler.
Yeah.
I mean, Blake Wheeler, again, if you're in a pool that has 10, 12, even 14 teams, Blake Wheeler is a first-round pick, in my opinion. You can pencil him in for at least 75 points. So you want to take guys that have a history, a trend of production. And sure, you might want to take a bit of a reach on a younger player that you think is going to have a breakout season, but I would stick to the guys that are guaranteed to get you a certain point total.
Let's look at the defense when we come back. Pete Jensen of NHL.com joins us to talk about fantasy hockey defensemen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our fantasy hockey preview on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday morning, the 1st of October. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We continue our fantasy hockey discussion by bringing in Pete Jensen from NHL.com to talk about fantasy defensemen. Pete, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me. And, we're less than 2 weeks away from the season, so exciting to start talking about the real thing.
Absolutely it is, and obviously with a couple weeks before the start of the regular season, everybody is scheduling their fantasy hockey draft, so that's why it's a perfect opportunity to have you on, Pete, to discuss fantasy defensemen. Last season, I would say a bit of a golden age, at least a relative golden age, when it comes to defenders and their point totals. We have to start with Erik Karlsson. Averages a point per game last year, 82 points in 82 games played, fourth overall in the NHL in scoring. Is it realistic to expect a similar performance from Erik Karlsson this season, or should people that draft Karlsson expect a bit of a regression from the point-per-game totals he put up last year?
There may be some regression, but I would expect 75 or more from him, the way that he drives that offense. And if he does stay healthy, I think he's worth, in a standard league, definitely the number five pick behind the top four forwards, Kane, Crosby, Ovechkin and Jamie Benn. So I think he's that good. I would treat him as such. And I think the position has revolutionized over this past year with how many guys were among the top point getters in the league, and they were from the defense position right up there with the top forwards. Last season there were three guys in the top 15 with Karlsson, Burns, and Chris Letang, who was fifth in the league in points after Mike Sullivan took over. And then right behind those guys you had guys like Byfuglien and Ekman-Larsson, who I have ranked very highly because they finished right behind those guys with full-on category coverage. So it's amazing how much the defense position has changed over the past year or so.
Pete, when you're talking about Brent Burns, and I think you'd agree that after Erik Karlsson, you can make that argument that Brent Burns is the second defenseman that is taken in your fantasy hockey pool, puts up 75 points and 27 goals. Do you think he's going to be able to hit that mark again this year?
Well, I mean, the Sharks, it's amazing. They bring everybody back from the team that made the Cup Final, and they got a little stronger. I mean, they have prospect Timo Meier is going to try to make the roster. They hopefully have a healthy Tomas Hertl. They have Mikhail Bodker, who's been really good on the power play, that could eventually unseat Patrick Marleau. So put that all together, and you have Brent Burns in a just as good of a situation, if not better. It'll be amazing. It'll be interesting to see if he's able to replicate the 350 shots on goal. I mean, we saw him in the Cup Final trying to get shots on net constantly, and of course for Canada in the World Cup of Hockey. So I think he's in a great spot. In a hits league, I would even give him a slight edge over Karlsson, because I think he's still good for 65, 70 points with unparalleled category coverage, and especially in shots on goal and power play points, where he was top five in the league in both of those.
Pete Jensen joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing fantasy hockey, specifically the defenseman position. Pete, P.K. Subban and Shea Weber, they were traded for one another in the offseason. They finished last year with the same number of points. That was 51 points each. Of course, Subban did it in 10 fewer games than Weber did. you know, starting with Subban and the fantasy implications of him moving to Nashville, the fact he's going to be playing in a Peter Laviolette system, a much more up-tempo, push-the-puck system than he had been in Montreal, does that make P.K. Subban a prime candidate to rebound and get back to being one of the upper echelon fantasy hockey defensemen?
Yeah, I think, remember, a couple of years ago, we were always debating between Subban and Carlson for the number one defenseman rank in fantasy. I think he gets back to that range. I have him 10th overall. I have him higher than most people do. I believe Yahoo has him in the 20s. That's where he's been going on average. I think if you can get him with a late first, early second round pick after Carlson and Burns are off the board, I think you got to take that chance. He goes from playing with Andre Markov, who's still serviceable but aging, and you have Roman Josi, who had 60 plus points last season, is going to be playing at least on the power play with PK Subban. So I think you can expect from Subban 25 to 30 power play points, 60 to 65 overall, and outstanding category coverage, which when you line it up with everybody else would equate to a top 10 or top 15 overall finish. I really like what he brings to the table for Nashville. I love Nashville's first power play unit, and I think that PK Subban will be as motivated as he's ever been after being slighted by not only the Montreal Canadiens, but also Team Canada. After they had to make a replacement for the World Cup of Hockey, they didn't choose him. So it's there'll be a lot of motivation for Subban, and I think he'll do nice things if he stays healthy for his fantasy value.
Pete, Chris Letang is a guy that I thought had a very underrated season, put up a career-high 67 points, and then he didn't really miss a beat in the playoffs. He was an integral reason why the Pittsburgh Penguins won the Stanley Cup this year. What can we expect out of Chris Letang? Do you think you're still taking him as one of your top five defensemen in fantasy?
Yeah, for sure, and it's funny because we're talking about all these top-tier defensemen. And it may sound like I'm saying all positive things about all of them, but I actually am a big believer that to have a successful fantasy season this year, I think you need to get one, if not two, of the top, you know, five or six defensemen. I really think it's that important. If you could lock down two of those guys, maybe Burns or Subban in the second round, and then Chris Letang, who's going in some leagues as deep as the third or fourth round, I love Letang. He has so many weapons on the first power play. He's out there at even strength with any of those three lines, either with Malkin's line or Kessel's line or Crosby's line. If they spread out their offense like that, and every time Letang takes a shift, he's on, you know, in a great spot to contribute to the scoring. I think he could even, if he stays healthy, and he remains an injury risk a little bit, but I think he could be as productive, if not more productive, than any of these defensemen we've talked about, including Erik Karlsson. I think his ceiling is that high if he ever does play a full season.
Pete Jensen is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Pete is with NHL.com. We're talking about fantasy hockey defensemen. And Pete, we got to ask you about Dustin Byfuglien, of course, because you know you're on a Winnipeg radio station.
Oh, yeah.
And Dustin is pretty consistent when it comes to his point totals, 53, 53, lockout shortened year, we'll take that out of the picture, 56, which is his career high, a bit of a dip 2 years ago to 45, but he missed some games and then back to 53 again last season. Is there any reason to believe he's going to be anywhere but the 53, 54, 55 mark? Do you see another step forward that Byfuglien can take, or do you think that's pretty much where he's going to be at?
I mean, he's so steady. He's pretty much in that realm every year. Especially last year, he was so good in every single category. He even had a lot of those top defensemen have a minus rating. He had plus rating. He pounds on the shots on goal. If it's a hits league, I think he's right up there among the top 20 overall assets in a hits league. And really, when you look at Winnipeg's improvements and some of the young blood they have in their lineup, from Kyle Connor to Patrick Laine and obviously Nikolai Ehlers, and hopefully having a healthy, healthy Brian Little in addition to Scheifele and Wheeler. I mean, that's a pretty loaded top nine forward mix. And I think if the coaching staff prioritizes or picks their spots with his minutes and gets him out there on the power play as usual and gets him out there in favorable, even strength spots, his scoring could go up potentially because of how much better I think Winnipeg has been, and I think they're a good candidate to go from missing the playoffs to making the playoffs this season. So it'll be interesting. I mean, he's pretty highly regarded in fantasy. Should be off the board by the top 30, 35 picks, but he's a very safe bet to finish in the top 30, 35 overall players.
Pete, we want to go over some second-tier defensemen, some guys that you would take maybe in the second, sure, third, and lower rounds. One guy that I wanted to ask you about was Keith Yandle, who was acquired by the Florida Panthers, put up 47 points for the New York Rangers last season. Now he's going to be passing the puck to the likes of Alexander Barkov and Jaromir Jagr. How many points do you think he's going to get in Florida this year? Where are you taking him in your fantasy hockey pool?
I think that I mentioned to get two top-tier defensemen. I think if you're able to get one early and then maybe you don't have a chance to pick up one of the others, the ability to get Keith Yandle as your second fantasy defenseman in, say, the fifth or sixth round, maybe even seventh, depending on the league format, is a huge opportunity that you have to take. I think that he has a chance to not only get back to the level of power play point production and point production that he had with the Arizona Coyotes years ago. I think he has a chance with a stronger defense behind him. The Rangers had to use him in ways that he wasn't accustomed to. They had to really lean on him defensively. He's more of a puck mover and a offensive-minded defenseman. So I think put it all together, and he could go from being drafted in the 15 to 20 range among defensemen on average to finishing maybe in the 5 to 10 range among defensemen based on how he plays so well. And he's another guy. He's going to be out there with a first power play unit, hopefully with Aaron Ekblad as a second defenseman, and then that top line of Barkov, Huberto, and Jaromir Jagr. So I think the Panthers, it's amazing. In 1 year, we've seen so many of their players being drafted among the top 100 now. You have a really realistic chance to nab two or three of those guys if you get them as bargains. You could get Barkov and Huberto, or Barkov and Yandle, or Yandle and Jagr. It's very feasible to get multiple guys from the Florida Panthers, and they should challenge the Lightning for that division title once again.
Pete Jensen of NHL.com joins us. We're talking about fantasy hockey defensemen. Pete, a couple more questions for you before we let you run. Seth Jones, sure, is a player who, of course, was traded last season from Nashville to Columbus. He's seen steady improvement in his offensive total since he broke into the league, 25 points, then 27 points, then 31 points last year, splitting between Nashville and Columbus. Now that he's the man in Columbus, there's nobody else really that's, he's their horse on the back end. Can you see another elevation in the point totals for Seth Jones coming this season?
Yeah, I would expect him if he's playing that type of minutes and seeing the type of usage that on the power play especially that he saw in the second half of the season, he should finish in the 15-20 range among defensemen, and he should probably score 40-45 points, which would be a huge jump from last season and his previous seasons. He's known as a shutdown defenseman. I think it's worth watching if the Blue Jackets use Zach Werenski, who was from their Calder Cup championship team in Lake Erie. He's now likely to make the roster, or at least challenge for the roster, and be used on the power play. But Seth Jones is one of the clear breakout fantasy defenseman candidates in the league, right, for this season. And I think the ability to get him outside the top 120 players, if you can get him as your third or even fourth fantasy defenseman, you'll be in an outstanding spot, especially if he well exceeds that average draft position, which is pretty low.
Pete, Tobias Enstrom, he's a guy 5 or 6 years ago, he might be a defenseman that you pick, as a top 20 defenseman. He was putting up regularly, 50, 51 points. The last couple of years, his point totals have really dipped with the Winnipeg Jets. The Winnipeg Jets, of course, this year have got Patrick Laine in the lineup, Kyle Connor. Do you expect Tobias Enstrom to maybe not get back to 50 points, but do you expect his point totals to go up, maybe get back to 35, 40 points?
Well, he's completely off the radar, as is Tyler Myers and Jacob Trouba, because of his contract stalemate. I mean, it's depending on how things break. If the Jets end up trading Jacob Trouba and maybe there's an injury to Tyler Myers or something, I could see Enstrom getting back onto the fantasy map. I wouldn't exactly bank on it, but when he's healthy and he's used the right way, He would definitely contribute to the scoring more frequently than he has the past 2 years, especially if the Jets have an improved younger lineup, high-flying lineup. So he would qualify as a deep sleeper. I wouldn't draft Enstrom in a standard league, but I would throw him on my watch list and keep an eye on him just in case he gets back into that fantasy-relevant territory.
Pete, we'll let you go on this last question. I think we end the interview each and every year with this sort of last question about, you know, maybe not sleepers necessarily, but value picks, guys who are going later than you think they should, that are going to provide good value for whoever drafts them in a league.
Yeah, sure. I like Morgan Riley a lot for the Leafs. I think they're going to be much improved. He's going outside the top 150 in many formats, so I think he's an outstanding value for the Toronto Maple Leafs as they bring in Mitchell Marner and Austin Matthews and William Nylander and Soshnikov. They have a lot of young forwards that could improve the offense, and if he's the main power play man from the blue line, he could have a big jump in points, same as Jones, to that 40-45 range, and improved total over his previous seasons. I also like a little higher. You might have to reach for him a little bit, but he should be available in the 90 to 100 range in a non-keeper league, is Ristolainen. I think he has the capability to finish among the top 10 fantasy defensemen if the Sabres take a big jump. And then deeper down the line, I really like, we talk a lot about Justin Falk and his value. I think if Noah Hanifin ends up on a first power play unit with Falk, not to mention Teuvo Teravainen and Jeff Skinner, guys like that, Victor Rask, they have an underrated thing going right now in Carolina. And I think Noah Hanifin is getting completely overlooked. And what you look at what he did as an 18, 19-year-old last season. He has room to grow, and he was also very productive in his spots. So, yeah, Noah Hanifin is a great late-round sleeper, in my opinion.
Pete Jensen covers the world of hockey for NHL.com. Pete, really appreciate your time and your analysis on the fantasy hockey defenseman this morning.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me, and keep up the great work. You guys put on a nice fantasy preview show.
Appreciate that, Pete. Take care of yourself. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss fantasy hockey defensemen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Carlson makes one move. It's a shot away. Scores! Oh, my heavens. Santa puts some more of that in the stocking. That is unbelievable.
Our good friend Dean Brown with the call of Erik Karlsson working a little bit of his magic, scoring for the Ottawa Senators. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Fantasy Hockey Preview Show. We'll continue our discussion on defensemen, no doubt. Erik Karlsson rooting for Team Europe. Henrik Stenson, his countrymate from Sweden, at the Ryder Cup being played at Hazeltine in Chaska, Minnesota. Team Europe on the board with the first victory so far in the morning sessions. It's now a 5-4 score for Team USA over Team Europe. USA, I believe, is winning two of the other three matches that are still on the course. So they'll likely keep their lead through to the afternoon sessions, but it seems like it's going to come down to a pretty interesting Sunday with the, I believe it's, is it 12 or is it 8 singles matches, I believe, tomorrow. It's either 8 or 12, I'll double check. Singles matches taking place tomorrow to round up the Ryder Cup. So, Ezzy, let me ask you this. Erik Karlsson, last year, point-per-game player, fifth overall in the NHL in scoring.
It's incredible,
isn't
it? You
would be justified in taking him in the first round. How comfortable would you be taking him in the first round of your fantasy hockey pool?
Very comfortable.
Very comfortable.
Yeah.
Like Ezzy sweatpants on a Sunday comfortable?
Absolutely. Ezzy with
that's
sweatpants
comfort.
And
slippers?
A bowl of chips and salsa.
Wow.
And a big gulp, comfortable.
That's pretty comfortable. Slippers?
I'm not a big slippers
really?
Guy. Yeah. Okay. I'm not a big robe guy either.
Yeah. Robes, I get. Robes bulk up and they get uncomfortable. Slippers you're missing out on. Nice pair of slippers.
I'm more of a Birkenstock guy, Drew.
Okay. Fair enough. So you're comfortable taking...
about pom-poms? Do you like pom-poms?
Why would I have a pair of pom-poms?
I don't know. On a toque.
Well, a toque maybe, but I'm not going to walk around with a pair of pom-poms.
What about earmuffs?
Nah, again, it's a very unique look you're going for.
Okay, well, I'll you know take your advice and I'll try walking around the house in slippers.
I recommend it.
But I like bare feet. But anyways, let's get back to the fantasy defenseman here, Drew. Erik Karlsson, you know, you just mentioned it. You should have no problem taking Erik Karlsson. I wouldn't take Erik Karlsson if I had, you know, a top pick, well, top five pick. I don't know if he's going to finish fifth overall. He had 82 points last year, but that was a pretty big jump. He's had 74 points before. I'd expect him to be more around the low 70s, Drew.
Okay.
So Ottawa Senators are a good team, and you know there's been some turnover there. They've brought in Derek Brassard in that trade for Mika Zibanejad, but the guy...
So you're really more comfortable taking Erik Karlsson, say, in a second round than you are in a first round, despite the fact he had first round productivity last season.
Right, and I don't think the gap between Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson is as big as you think it is. Look at Brent Burns, 75 points, 27 goals. You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say Brent Burns scores the most points for a defenseman this year.
Okay, that's a bold prediction. Not really, not considering that bold. He finished second last year.
I'm also a huge Burnsy fan.
Well, contract year for Brent Burns, so he's certainly looking to cash in
big.
He
was phenomenal in the playoffs, Drew, yep. And he was phenomenal in the World Cup of Hockey. I mean, Drew Doughty and Mark-Edward Vlasic and Shea Weber might get more credit for the way they play defensively, but Brent Burns, in addition to being a great offensive defenseman, is a great defensive defenseman. And, you know, 24 points in 24 playoff games. I'm going to take Brent Burns first overall for defenseman.
You're going to take him ahead of Erik Karlsson?
Yep.
Okay, fair enough. It's a, you know, I don't disagree with you because Brent Burns, I mean, he certainly has been, he's bounced back and forth between forward and D. Clear that he, I think he's better off on the defense. You look at a guy like Chris Letang, though. Chris Letang played 71 games last year, and on a points per game basis, actually finished higher than Brent Burns. 71 games, 67 points, 0.94 points per game, whereas Brent Burns, who played the entire year and got 75 points, was 0.91 points per game. I mean, are we seeing, you know, Chris Letang had those health issues for so many years in a row. Are we seeing the reemergence of Chris Letang as a bona fide stud when it comes to fantasy defensemen?
Yeah, and I think when you're talking about Chris Letang, I think you're talking about the best defenseman in this past year's playoffs. He was excellent, and I think Chris Letang sometimes doesn't get credit for how good of a defenseman he is. Forget about the fantasy points, and I realize this is a fantasy hockey preview show, Drew,
sure.
But he's an excellent defensive defenseman as well. But when you're talking about offense, he's a guy that can go out there and quarterback the power play. So absolutely, you're talking about Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson, Chris Letang in the conversation for the first defenseman that you should take in your pool. Another guy that I'm going to throw out there as who you should consider as a top defenseman in your fantasy pool that we didn't talk to Pete Jensen about, and that's Roman Josi.
Sure.
Roman Josi,
well,
had
typical that we wouldn't talk about him because nobody in the NHL talks about him, even though he's one of the best defensemen in the league.
He is, and you know whether or not he's paired up with PK Subban, I think Roman Josi and PK Subban are two guys that I'd pencil in easily for 60 points. Josi had, I believe, 61 points last year. It was his career year, but I don't think he's reached his ceiling. I think you could make the argument Josi hits 70 points this year.
Well, I think PK Subban is a fascinating case. You know, he had 60 points 2 years ago. He obviously had a bit of a step back last year, playing 51 points in 68 games, only 6 goals. PK Subban plus Peter Laviolette plus an up-tempo system with some pretty good offensive talent, Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, I can see PK Subban really taking even another step beyond the 60-point mark for in terms of points for the Nashville Predators this coming year.
He's on a better team.
He's on a better team.
Right, he's going to be paired up with a better defenseman.
And he's going to be given the free rein to push the puck up the ice as opposed to in Montreal where Therrien and Bergevin wanted him to be cautious and didn't enjoy some of his freelance work he would often perform on the back end.
You know, and another guy we talked to Pete Jensen about, and of course we're very familiar with him, is Dustin Byfuglien.
Sure.
I mean, he averages 53, 54 points. I wouldn't be surprised if those point totals go up. The Jets had a bad year last year. Mm-hmm. Dustin Byfuglien was one of their top players in an off year. And now that you've got Patrick Laine in the equation,
sure. Should be a better 60, offense.
60 points is not out of the question for Buff. So if you're talking about 60 points, he's probably, you know, the 6th, 7th, 8th defenseman that you take. You know, over the last 5 years, I think Buff is 4th amongst total points for defensemen. So I mean, he might even be the fourth or fifth defenseman that you take.
I should mention before we head to break that the preceding segment was brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, two shows, Phil Hanley, his final two shows in town. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com. Ezzy, we've checked off fantasy forwards. We've checked off fantasy defensemen. That leaves us only with goaltenders. We'll talk about them next with Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, our fantasy hockey preview show on TSN 1290. Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. It's our fantasy hockey preview show. We've covered forwards, we've covered defensemen. That leaves us with goaltenders. And in order to do so, we're going to bring in Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Kevin joins us from beautiful British Columbia. And Kevin, am I to understand you have a special passenger in the vehicle with you? Kevin, are you there?
Heading into Lumbee, BC for Kraft Hockeyville.
And you have the Stanley Cup with you? Is that what I understood?
No, it's in the car ahead of me. We're just following it in to surprise a few people as part of the Kraft Hockeyville celebration.
Okay, so you're just chasing after the Stanley Cup.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's not strapped in next to me. That would be nice. I might actually not follow the people and just go home and take it home if that was the case.
Seriously, I was going to tell you to swing it by the studio here. We'll take a picture with that.
Yeah, Kevin, is Matt Murray with you too?
No.
Kevin joins us to talk about fantasy hockey goaltenders. Of course, you can read Kevin's work at In Goal Magazine. Kevin, last year, obviously, if we had this conversation last October, and I'm sure we did, the conversation would have been about Carey Price and him being the best goaltender to be in the NHL and the goalie to be selected, first overall. And it started that way for the Montreal Canadiens. They got off to that tremendous start, but then we know about the injury and then the tailspin. And, if you drafted Carey Price last year, you unfortunately got an asset that was on the sidelines for the majority of the season. Fast forward 12 months later, we saw his performance at the World Cup of Hockey. If you are choosing a goaltender to be selected first overall in an upcoming fantasy hockey pool, are you picking Carey Price or are you looking at a guy like Braden Holtby, who had the most wins for a fantastic team in the Washington Capitals?
I think I should throw out the caveat that my nickname in the hockey pool I've been doing for 20 years is the Donator. So I'm not sure I'm the best fantasy guy advice. From a goaltending perspective, Carey Price is the best in the world. There is a level between him and the next tier, the Braden Holtbys. From a team play perspective, though, I don't know if you expect anything less from Braden Holtby this year with the Washington Capitals, especially with the way things went in the playoffs. I mean, that Barry Trotz is going to have them focused defensively, and Holtby will benefit from that. And obviously the run support. So, in leagues where you're counting wins, and that's the most important thing, as much as I think Carey's fine, and I actually got a chance to spend some time on the ice with him this summer in August, and physically he looked as good as he ever has. He actually has dropped some weight. He's cognizant of the fact that as he gets older, as he calls them 300 up-downs a day in practice, dropping to his knees, he needs to make sure that he's not carrying any extra weight because that adds a lot of burden to his body. So, and the Habs are talking about pulling back his games played. They went out and got Al Montoya. They don't want to run Carey Price into the ground. So I kind of feel like I expect him to have a healthy season. And yet, if I was a fantasy guy, I might lean towards Braden Holtby as just more of a safe bet, even though Carey is, like I said, the better goaltender, the best goaltender.
Kevin, Henrik Lundqvist, he's coming off a very strong performance at the World Cup of Hockey. Has the supposed start of Lundqvist's decline, has that been overstated? Are you still taking him in your fantasy hockey pool as a top goaltender?
Looks like we may have dropped Kevin there. Kevin, are you there? No, it looks like we may have dropped Kevin, so we'll work to get him back on the line. You know, your question there.
Well, hopefully there's not a problem with the Stanley Cup.
I'm sure that the Stanley Cup is in good hands. Don't worry about that. It's probably got more security than, probably more than the Prime Minister does in this country, for or somewhere close to that level of security. Your question about Henrik Lundqvist. What do you think about Lundqvist there in terms of fantasy hockey performance?
I still think he's a top goaltender, and he might not be the Henrik Lundqvist that he was 4 or 5 years ago, but I would still take him as a top goaltender in my fantasy hockey pool for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. I think that you'll see the Rangers probably try and lessen his workload a little bit, and the Rangers are sort of an interesting team. They're sort of a tweener team in the Eastern Conference in that they're not a fantastic team, but they're probably still a playoff team, but you wouldn't expect them to be a Stanley Cup contender.
Right, and when you look at Henrik Lundqvist, you also have to look at the defense in front of him. Ryan McDonagh and Dan Girardi didn't have good years. I thought Mark Stahl, for most of last season, was their top defenseman. You look at the turnover, Dan Boyle, Keith Yandle, it's going to be a younger defense in New York. So I think when you look at the goaltending situation in New York, I don't think Henrik Lundqvist individually has diminished as far as his skill set goes. So I think that I still consider him to be a top goalie in the league.
What do you think about Kevin's point about Carey Price versus Braden Holtby there? Who would you take?
I'm still taking Carey Price.
You're still taking Carey Price, even with everything you saw out of Braden Holtby last season? I mean, I'm still surprised and no one's talking about it. We'll talk about it after the break. Kevin, we got you back on the line?
Yeah, sorry about that. Big city boy in the backwoods country road. Never even thought that the cell reception might drop here and there. So I pulled over until we're done, guys. Sorry about that.
No worries. Kevin, we were asking you about Henrik Lundqvist and his performance and what you're expecting from him for this upcoming NHL season.
Been the most consistent guy through the first 10 years of his career. It was encouraging to see him play so well at the World Cup. And what was encouraging to me is Henrik is a guy whose success has been predicated on a real belief, a firm belief, that the way he plays the game is the best way for him to play it. And that's that people talk about playing deep. I think of it as an inside-out approach from the goal line out, where he rarely challenges aggressively. The only time he comes out past the blue is on a breakaway to kind of time his retreat. And the thing that worried me towards the end of last season wasn't that he was getting lit up by the Penguins behind a terrible Rangers defense. It's that he seemed to lose his faith in that system. Even within a game against the Penguins, there were times where he'd be caught deep on a clean look and get beat, and then two plays later he'd be out at the top of his crease challenging and they'd just pass it around him. So to me it's really important. You saw with Sweden that when that structure is there and a belief in what's going on in front of him is there, that style can still have success. He needs to find that with the Rangers, and obviously a team that overall I would say is a little bit in decline, and especially on the back end, going to be keeping a close eye on that. Does he feel like he can play the style that's allowed him to have this kind of success throughout an entire season behind that defense? Can they take away the middle of the ice? Because that's the one thing. You really need to funnel things to the outside against a goaltender that plays that deep. I don't care how good his reactions are, how good a goaltender he is. You give up the middle and clean looks from the middle with a guy who's playing that far back in his crease, and there is space that shooters are going to find. So I'm not ready to say it's the beginning of the end. I think he's been, and even last year, was one of the top goalies. When you factor in shot quality as much as we can measure it, that's limited. But when you do factor in what we can measure, he actually ended up being near the top of the league again, still finished with a 922. I am not ready to write him off at all and was really encouraged by the World Cup.
Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kevin, I think that from a fantasy hockey perspective, two of the most fascinating options this coming season are Jake Allen in St. Louis and John Gibson in Anaheim. Both of those guys were in sort of timeshare situations for the last number of years. Gibson and Anderson in Anaheim, Jake Allen and Brian Elliott in St. Louis. Now both, Anderson has been shipped to Toronto and Brian Elliott's in Calgary. So Gibson and Allen have the opportunity to really run with the ball on two very good teams. Do you think that those two players will deserve a bump up will get a bump up in their wins and in their stats as a result of no longer being in a timeshare situation?
Yeah, I mean, they're both capable. I got to be honest, I like Jake Allen's chances better. I know John Gibson is much more highly touted, but I like the structure that he's got in front of him. in St. Louis with Ken Hitchcock in his last year. I know they've had some changes personnel-wise with Backes gone, and that might change the personality as well. But out of those two, if I was picking, I'd pick Allen ahead of Gibson. John Gibson has incredible talent. I haven't seen it progress much, if at all, frankly, from a technical perspective, since he's gotten to the NHL. And when I talk about technique, I don't mean blocking. I mean sort of, you know, the little sort of biomechanical movements that allow and tactical decisions that allow you to kind of have consistency in your positioning and in the way you move around your crease. Gibson is a guy with a lot of flow to his game, which puts him a lot more reliant on sort of rhythm and timing than other guys. And I would not be surprised at all to see him have some consistency issues. He's a guy that is capable of giving you incredible highs because of the natural athleticism he has, but he's also going to have some downs because he relies too heavily on it. So if I'm picking between the two, I'm picking Jake Allen.
Kevin, I know you're in Lumbee, B.C. right now, but we got to ask you about the Winnipeg Jets goaltending situation. In your opinion, is Connor Hellebuyck ready to be anointed the number one goalie? And who do you think is better suited to be the backup to Connor Hellebuyck, Michael Hutchinson or Andre Pavlik?
I don't know about anointed, but if he plays like he's capable of, he's capable of earning the job. I do believe he's the better of that three. I got to be honest with you. I get to spend some time with Eric Comrie in the summers on the ice, and he may be better than the other two as well. Frankly, I think he is. I've had other goalie coaches. I had a goalie coach that's not in the Jets organization tell me this summer that he believes Eric Comrie in the NHL right now would be the best goaltender in the league along the ice. That's how well this kid moves. So it's a bit of a conundrum. It's arguable that your better two goalies are the two guys who might start in the minor leagues in Hellebuyck and Eric Comrie. But talent doesn't mean you're ready for the NHL. There's always learning curve. We saw that with Hellebuyck. We saw that with Hutchinson 2 years ago. So I think it's a good situation for the Jets in that they don't have to rush anyone. They can let guys earn spots, and they can put them back down and get them playing again in the American League if they do run into speed bumps in the NHL. There's a lot of different steps to learning how to play in the NHL, and one of them is just kind of first as a backup, the amount of time in practice to focus on your game and try and be game ready without playing games, and then when you take the step to be a starter, you lose all that time with the goalie coach. Now you've got to manage your fatigue and manage your game without the benefit of going out early for every practice because you're trying to manage, you know, your energy level. So there are always steps that need to be taken. There probably still will be steps for Hellebuyck, and there are steps yet for Eric Comrie. Michael Hutchinson seems well suited for that backup role. If you're asking me who the better goalie is, Hellebuyck and Pavlik, I think it's Hellebuyck. Contracts obviously come into effect here, but I don't know. I might like Hellebuyck playing more as opposed to playing behind Pavlik. It's a real tough situation. I'd rather have Hellebuyck at number three. It's three or one for me with him. I don't know that what you do with Hutchinson or Pavlik if Connor's your number one, but having him sit and watch Pavlik for long stretches, I don't know what good that does him at this point.
Kevin Woodley of InGoal Magazine is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kevin, just a couple more questions for you. Nashville is sort of a popular team to come out of the Western Conference. Everyone looks at some of the moves they made this offseason, specifically acquiring P.K. Subban from Montreal. That might be sort of a missing piece to push them forward in the Western Conference. How concerned should Predators fans be about the performance of Pekka Rinne?
A little bit. You know, he had that a couple years ago. He came back from the hip surgery and had a great season. But again, there's been consistency issues. He is so talented physically for a guy his size, but he was allowed to kind of use that that reactive element and play a very active style for his size. A lot of goalie coaches feel more active than he needs to be given his size. And, you know, again, it comes back to that rhythm and timing. If you're going to move as much as he does, and when you're as big as he does, the bigger they are, the bigger the holes when you move around the crease, You're going to leave yourself a little prone to, you know, again, having good reads and good rhythm and having everything kind of, you know, play out the way you expect it to based on those reads. I think that when you look at his size and his skill package, he might be better served to be a little less aggressive, a little more conservative with his positioning, and at times just use that frame to take up space. But that's not the way he plays. He's always believed firmly that he has to be an active goalie to be at his best. And as he ages and the injuries start to pile up, you can't help but wonder, as you see the consistency waiver, whether he's able to still play at the level we all associate him with and the contract he got associates him with, as maybe some of those reactive elements start to dissipate into his mid-30s. He's a guy that I think could overhaul his game and play for a long time, but in his mind, he needs to be the guy he was in his 20s style-wise to have success. He really, truly believes that, and I think it's going to be hard for him to have consistency that way.
Kevin, we've got one final question for you here, and we appreciate you coming on this morning. You're in Lumbee, B.C. You're around the Stanley Cup, so we got to finish off talking to you about the Pittsburgh Penguins goaltending situation. As you know, Matt Murray is... won the Stanley Cup for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and everybody kind of thought that Marc-Andre Fleury's days in Pittsburgh were over. Matt Murray's obviously injured right now, wasn't able to compete in the World Cup of Hockey with Team North America. Marc-Andre Fleury, 35 wins last year. Do you think maybe he's been written off too soon?
Oh, far too soon. He was their best player for the first half of the season. He's the reason they were where they are in terms of playoff positioning before he got hurt. Marc-Andre... it's a tough one because they're both great goalies. And what I am struggling to see how they're going to make it work is, you know, with Flower having a no-movement clause, he can't go into the expansion draft. And there's no way, you see what you have in Matt Murray and the upside there, there's no way they want to lose him. So they almost have to move Marc-Andre Fleury before the end of the season. And I'm a little surprised that other teams didn't come knocking. Maybe it's a contract, maybe it's the asking price. But Marc-Andre Fleury over the last couple of years, since Mike Bales got there as a goaltending coach, and, you know, I talked with Pekka about positional staples, Fleury was all over the place before. Nobody in the organization had ever given him positional staples. Pucks would go in off his ass from below the goal line because he didn't know how to play on his posts. He's fixed all that stuff. He's kind of put a nice foundational base underneath all that athleticism and explosive lateral speed that he used to have. I think he is a goalie who's still very capable of being in that tier right below Carey Price near the top of the league. The problem is you can't keep both him and Matt Murray, and we see what Murray is. He's big, he moves well, and he's clearly got a great head on his shoulders. Talking to him this summer and his coaches this summer, the way he thinks the game is as impressive as the way he plays it. Talking about the need to not get predictable, to not become too technical in a league where more guys are going to have a better pre-scout on him now after he's been to the finals, adjusting some of his tactics to make sure some of the post-play things that were exposed at times during the Stanley Cup playoffs had been closed and sealed for the upcoming season. So there's a ton to like about both guys. I guess from a fantasy perspective, I'd say avoid, because I can see both getting, you know, pretty much an even load here, especially with Murray injured to start the season, and I just don't know long term. If I was a team like the Flames, I know that I like Elliott, they got him, but if I was a team that was looking for a number one, or thinks they need a number one beyond this season, I'd be keeping a close eye on Marc-Andre Fleury, because I still do believe he is an elite level goaltender in the NHL.
Kevin Woodley covers the world of goaltending for In Goal Magazine. Pick it up. It's fantastic analysis and insight. Kevin, really appreciate your time this morning. We'll let you get back to chasing after the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, fortunately I drive fast. I'm a little behind it now, but we'll get there.
Get going. Drive safe. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, guys.
One final segment coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to all our guests who joined us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, a jam-packed show. We started it off with my brain has gone blank, Ezzy. My cold has finally come in and caught up
to
me.
We started it off with David Pagnotta of the fourth period.
Yes.
Come on, Drew.
I've been fighting this cold for the last week or so. David Pagnotta of the fourth period. We also were joined by Gus Katsaros of McKean's Hockey, Pete Jensen of NHL.com, and Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine. Thanks to those guys. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on IllegalCurve.com. Ezzy, we got about 2 minutes, so really quickly, your impressions of the Winnipeg Jets performance during the exhibition season so far?
Yeah, well, the first game was a little bit rough against the Calgary Flames, but they picked it up certainly against the Minnesota Wild on Thursday night, and last night against the Edmonton Oilers was easily their best game in my opinion, and the shots were in favor of the Edmonton Oilers, but the Winnipeg Jets were all over the Edmonton Oilers, and Cam Talbot didn't have a very good game. Certainly Mark Scheifele drew with 3 points, goal and two assists, was the best player on the ice. I thought Kyle Connor certainly didn't look out of place, scored a beautiful goal. It was the Jets' fifth goal to really put the final nail in the coffin for the Edmonton Oilers.
Play clicking at mid-season. Well, actually, that wouldn't be mid-season form for the Jets. That would be never-before performance for the Jets.
Right, and you expected guys like Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler and Dustin Byfuglien to not miss a beat and be the top players. But a couple of guys that I think have really stood out early in the preseason, Adam Lowry playing in front of the net on the first power play unit. He picked up a goal. He had an assist later in the game. He was really good because I didn't think he was good in his first preseason game. Brandon Tanev has really impressed me. So he's a dark horse to make this team, but I think he's really stood out early in preseason. So it's going to be interesting to see who the Jets cut early on. It's going to be a very competitive rest of the training camp.
Absolutely. Next Saturday is the final Jets exhibition game. And, of course, next Saturday here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, it's going to be our season preview show. So stay tuned for that next Saturday, 9 a.m. here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Big props to Rory behind the board doing a great job. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball later on this afternoon here on TSN 1290.